welcome to the Every Woman podcast. I'm Anna, your host, and every month we'll be bringing you lively discussion and debate with inspiring women making a difference around the world, asking the questions you want the answers to, and doubtless prompting some more in the process. So listen in to hear the stories, insights, and opinions of those setting the pace and being the change. Today we're talking to Lucy Douglas, acting editor of Positive News, the daily online and quarterly print magazine, about the good things that are happening and about the role that journalism can play in changing our perceptions on the world and what we know about it. So welcome, Lucy.
Hi, hi. It's really nice to be here.
Hi, welcome. Lovely to have you. So good things are happening in the world then. I mean... They are.
They are.
Hooray.
They are happening. Yeah. It's very hard to see, especially at the moment, but they are still happening.
Well, that is amazing because, I mean, your average person might not think so, looking into the sort of looking glass of print and broadcast and online channels. They paint a much more fraught and doom-laden picture. I mean, the fact is that the news is a construct of sorts, isn't it? It's a selection of elements that serves a purpose. Let's start out by asking you, because obviously Positive News has a very different take on the world. But what is the psychological impact of the news cycle? I mean, how does it impact readers and also the journalists that create this running news narrative that we're all consuming 24/7 now?
So the kind of the stereotype newsroom mantra is like, if it bleeds, it leads. So in other words, the strongest stories and the ones that are going to be on our front pages or the opening headlines are the stories about like the worst things that have happened, wars, terrorist attacks, mass murder, all of those sorts of things. All the sort of psychological research into this sort of thing has kind of shown that as humans, we've got a negativity bias. So we pay more attention or we're more alert to those sorts of stories and those words like murder, war, pandemic, just because on a very instinctive level, we want to sort of understand any potential threats or dangers that we might face. So if we're exposed to all these stories all the time, we start to develop a distorted view of the world and see threats as quite real or imminent when in reality they're not. You know, the chances of us being caught up in a terror attack are extremely slim. So, you know, on a kind of very basic, simplified level, by only focusing on the bad things, we just start to think that the world is bad. And in reality, it's not. In reality, we have good and bad things in the world. And it's important to kind of look at both to have that more sort of balanced view of what's going on.
Because it is that feeling that everything is awful. And I think as news gathering and news dissemination has changed and the internet means that we are literally on all the time being bombarded with this negativity, it must have a massive impact on our general mental health as consumers. I mean, we'll talk about journalists in a second, but that sense that you're almost impotent because the world is such a terrible, awful place, but you're really just looking through a very small lens.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it. And like, I mean, for me, I had a moment where I sort of very, very clearly realised and made a very active decision to kind of emotionally remove myself a little bit from the news and politics. And I think it was about 6 months after Trump was elected. And I just couldn't handle listening to any more stories of how he was behaving. And I just sort of had to disengage myself with the sort of general news cycle. That's probably not a very good thing for a journalist to admit, but I just had to do that for my own sort of mental health and the way I was kind of seeing the world, because I was, as you sort of said, I was starting to feel extremely concerned about the world that I was living in and also extremely powerless to do anything about it. And that's not a healthy kind of mindset to be in.
The powerless part really interests me as well, and I'd like to talk about that a little bit later. But you know, there is that sense that if you are almost like waterlogged with the terrible you know, the terrible state of the world, it does take you to a point where you have absolutely no sense of agency anymore, because you're sort of sitting gibbering on your sofa, really, aren't you? Kind of like, oh
yeah, definitely.
The role of the news is to inform and to bring people to account, and also to give you that kind of the information that you need in order to be part of society. And if it's sort of effectively paralyzing you, it could be argued that it's not really doing its job.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I wouldn't want to say that the news isn't doing its job. I think it is definitely important to demonstrate where there are solutions out there to kind of big systemic challenges. And when you see those solutions in action and positive responses to very negative things and crises and events, then that can inspire you to act rather than feeling powerless to do anything about it. And if you've got no examples of how to kind of respond positively, then you're less likely to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And then if you feel also that, you know, your actions are going to have no effect, you're not going to want to do it. I mean, it's such an interesting question of bias. And I want to come back to this idea of, you know, traditional media having that negativity bias, and that, you know, the reasons are bad news sells. We're so hardwired, as you said. So how do you turn positive news into something that people want to consume? How does it have teeth? How does it draw people in if we are all automatically looking for that fight or flight response, which is, you know, innate in us?
So that's a really interesting question. I've actually seen journalists say, you know, maybe sort of on Twitter or whatever, kind of saying, you know, we tried to introduce more positive stories into our coverage, but people just weren't interested in them. Nobody clicked on those stories. And I mean, that's just kind of something I've seen in passing. It's not something I've like drilled down into. So I don't know, you know, how those positive stories were approached or presented. It's disheartening to hear that. On the flip side, for us at Positive News, we've definitely seen a kind of steadily growing increase in our readership, mm-hmm. and more people responding to what we're doing, and more people reading our website, more people subscribing to our magazine.
Is this during COVID or pre-COVID? Is it a general upward trend?
Both. So it was, yeah, like a general upward trend pre-COVID, and then actually right at the start of the pandemic, we had a real spike in new subscribers and people coming to the website. People really, really wanted to read positive stories or stories of solutions or constructive stories.
Yeah.
Going back to what you said in your question about having teeth. So our sort of motto at Positive News is good journalism about good things. So the first part of that is good journalism. So we hold ourselves to pretty high and rigorous editorial standards. We approach stories in the same way that any decent and professional news outfit will. So we rigorously report on things. Our stories are about solutions to problems, but we will always explore and highlight the limitations to those solutions or any criticisms of those solutions. So we're always kind of holding ourselves to the same sort of high journalistic standards, you know, that one would expect from any, you know, kind of top broadsheet or broadcaster. You know, I think readers do really appreciate that. So we don't tend to cover kind of fluffy stories about like heartwarming type things. We do proper reporting. And I think when you do that, people trust you and then they want to come back for more. You know, it's not a kind of quick dopamine hit. It's more thoughtful and thorough than that.
Mm. So this is constructive journalism, which was a phrase I read. This is the sense that, you know, everything you write, as you say, is held to a higher account. It just has a different approach. I mean, in terms of evaluating stories for publication, how do you, you know, if a story crosses your desk, how do you evaluate it as to how you're going to cover it, and indeed whether you're going to cover it?
On a purely practical level, there's a question of like resources. We're a really small organization, so sometimes there are really great stories that we just don't have the capacity to cover, or we've covered something similar very recently, or, you know, all of those sorts of very practical things. But as a sort of general rule for how I'm sort of thinking about stories for Positive News or how I approach them, I might start with the challenge or the negative thing. So like the global pandemic, the climate crisis, and so on. And then look for the solutions to that challenge or the positive responses to it. So just taking the coronavirus pandemic as an example, like as soon as it hit the UK, there were immediately stories of people responding in a positive way, in a constructive way, which we covered and then readers responded really, really well to. So that's a sort of a starting point. And yeah, I guess when a story kind of crossed my desk, how do I decide if we're going to cover it? So I think one thing that we try and tend to avoid with Positive News is covering too many hero stories. So that would be you know, here's this one great person that's done something really benevolent or generous or amazing. While that's really great and it's lovely to read about, what we are interested in is solutions that are bigger and will have a bigger impact than just kind of one person being very altruistic.
Yeah.
So, you know, we might, and we do cover stories about very small projects or grassroots organizations, but they need to be scalable, or they need to be operating in a way that is replicable to kind of tackle whatever the issue is on a much wider scale.
I mean, let's talk about COVID just because it's forefront of everyone's mind. So, you know, what were the positives in the pandemic? Tell me.
Just to say sort of first off, one thing it's really important for us to respect and acknowledge in our reporting of something like this and of this scale, the fact that there are positives to be found and there are solutions and constructive stories there doesn't diminish the devastation that this crisis has had and the loss that thousands, hundreds of thousands of families have felt, whether that's the grief of actually losing a loved one, or whether that's the loss of income and the loss of a job and the stress that comes along with that. This has devastated us as a global society. But in terms of the positive things, and I'm just talking about the UK here specifically, not the kind of the rest of the world, but immediately we saw just ordinary people clubbing together to look out for their neighbours and make sure that people who had to shield and stay inside and isolate were able to still get their food and their medication and everything that they needed to stay healthy and well and protect themselves. I mean, there's been sort of various bits of research done by like YouGov and the Office of National Statistics and places like that that sort of indicate that something around like between 2/3 and 80% of people have been kind of doing something to help out their neighbours or each other. I mean, that's a really positive thing. Unfortunately, it's taken a crisis for us all to kind of club together in that way. But the fact that people are responding in an altruistic way and in a community-minded way to look after other people rather than just solely looking after their own interests. Obviously, like, that's not everybody, but the majority of everyday people are looking out for each other. That's a really positive thing.
I think I saw, actually, you've got a story on the website today about the positive things that have happened around mental health during the corona pandemic, which I was really interested in. I mean, the point is, the world and the things that happen within it are not always black and white. And within the seeds of one thing, there may be another. You know, within the worst pandemic that we've known, there are positives. There are still positives. But is there something positive in every story, or is that the sort of Pollyanna approach that you're avoiding at Positive News? Tell me would you spin a story to find a positive, or do the positives leap out at you?
I think just as a blanket rule for reporting, like not necessarily just for us at Positive News, but just a blanket rule for reporting is don't try and force the story when there isn't one there. That, in my view, that's not good reporting. So yes, for us, like if we're looking at a particular story, if I'm not going to force a positive there if there just isn't one.
Or as you said, you know, pretend that the counterbalance doesn't exist. You know, we've just talked about corona.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's, you know, part of holding our reporting to a high standard is that, you know, we have to balance the argument. We have to balance the story with the limitations and the negative responses to it, if there are any. So, yeah, it's not about trying to force a positive somewhere where it isn't. It's about looking for the positive solutions to the challenge, or taking an alternative view of the story.
Yeah. Balanced news as well as positive news. I'm interested in knowing, as a journalist, how it feels. I don't know, what's your background in journalism? Did you work in traditional sort of medias with traditional news agendas before this?
I sort of cut my teeth in trade magazines and then was freelance for a long time and mostly covered sort of businessy type story. So yeah, I did a lot of business journalism. Mm. But for me, definitely working at Positive News has changed my mindset about various different social issues. And I find myself having conversations with friends when, you know, they might be lamenting some problem or other, and I'm like, no guys, it's gonna be fine, we just have to do X, Y, and Z, and then it's all gonna be okay. And I have to catch myself that I've got slightly too rose tinted glasses now, and I think we just need to make a few changes, and then we're gonna like live in this utopia.
I think you sound like the person that you would want at a dinner party for sure. Because that's the thing, we get drawn into these, you know, again, it's so delicious to feel so negative sometimes and have a bit of a rant at whatever's going on, and you know, everyone has a big complaint, and it's not just a British thing. I know there's a stereotype that, you know, British people like to complain. I think everybody likes to have a good old rant at, you know, the powers that be, or the thing that's going wrong or whatever. And changing that in ourselves, I mean, is so difficult, and it's not helped if you're not given any other platform through which to filter the way you look at the world. You need a new perspective, don't you?
Yeah, definitely. So for me personally, actually, one really good example is a climate crisis. Mm. So before I started working at Positive News, I was just completely disengaged with environmental issues and issues to do with climate change and the climate crisis. In my head, it was far too big an issue for me to really give much brain space to, because if I thought about it and thought about how the planet was going to burn and how tiny I am to that, and any decision that I personally would make to my lifestyle, to change my lifestyle, to live in a more environmentally friendly way or lower my carbon footprint, just seems so insignificant to the scale of the challenge that there was just no point in me thinking about it. And now, having worked at Positive News for a year and written about so many of the solutions that already exist or that are in the process of developing towards lowering emissions and tackling the climate crisis, I feel a lot more engaged on the issue and a lot more empowered around the issue. And I'm a lot more vocal on the issue now as well. I think my dad's getting really annoyed with me, because every time I go home, I'm like, no, we just need to stop doing this because it's really bad, and you should change your energy supplier and that sort of thing.
Well, I mean, so that's a really interesting point, because I'm sort of writing notes here, and I've just written down hope as a word. And I think that it's that idea that hope is not only a good thing that you can get by looking at things in a different perspective, but also it's the smart thing, really, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, and a lot of our stories, especially our magazine features, actually kind of revolve around the idea there are reasons to be hopeful about the future of the planet, of the future of our country, of our democracy. Like, they do exist, and it's important to look at those. And if you know what they are, then you can support them in whatever way you might be able to.
I think one thing that's really interests me is that Positive News is a cooperative, isn't it? It's not owned by any oligarch or news baron. I mean, you effectively own the narrative of your news, which I think is a really key point in terms of certainly mainstream print media. That definitely skews things to certain interests, which could be a reason why there isn't more of an idea of that sense of power that comes from more positive, hopeful solutions and more positive, hopeful, constructive journalism. I mean, tell me how that affects you as a business, that you are a cooperative.
It's a really great model, and I really like being part of a cooperative. I'm really kind of into alternative business models like cooperatives and employee-owned businesses and things like that. I think they're a really positive thing. The research into it shows that they're more resilient to kind of crises, economic crises, any kind of, you know, negative downturns than more traditional business models. But anyway, in terms of just a purely sort of practical level. So our co-owners, our community of co-owners, we've got about 1,500 co-owners in the cooperative. They don't have a sort of an active role in our news agenda. One of the issues that we face as a news organisation is that because of the name of our magazine, by default, anything that we publish, we are saying is positive. In some instances, there will be a question among, you know, among our readers, among our co-owners about whether or not that thing is positive. So, for example, things like farming animals, that's a really kind of contentious and sensitive issue for us. So we've, you know, we'll have readers who feel that farming animals at all is a really negative thing and that we shouldn't be doing it. We'll have other readers that will say, okay, well, farming animals in an intensive way is clearly bad for the environment and it's bad for animal welfare, but farming animals in a more sustainable and healthy way could actually be good for the environment, and the animals have a very high level of animal welfare. There are kind of issues like that where there is contention around what is the positive. And there are some topics in particular that if I cover, I will always get a few emails telling me that that thing that I've covered isn't positive and mm-hmm. they don't know why I've covered it. I guess that's part of the rough and the smooth of any news organisation. I have a friend that works at the BBC and she always says, as long as they're getting an equal number of complaints from both sort of ends of the political spectrum, then they know they're sort of doing okay.
It's all fine.
Yeah, exactly.
Letters with green ink. I mean, obviously we all look at the world in different ways, as you said. I mean, you know, one person's positive might not be another person's positive, but there's also, you know, sort of intersections of age. I imagine the way that millennials look at the news possibly is quite different to Gen X or, you know, baby boomers. Also ethnicity, gender. I mean, how do you account for that in your agenda?
So I'm in the millennial age bracket, I guess. I'm in my early 30s, so I was born in the late 80s. And so, for example, stories around inclusion and initiatives that promote inclusion in whatever organization or institution, I tend to view those as positive, constructive stories that are offering a solution to a problem, whereas we may well have older readers or readers of a different generation who don't quite have the same point of view on those sorts of stories or don't necessarily view them as constructive as I do.
Yeah.
There will often be a kind of generational different take on what is positive and what isn't. And it's not just generational either. We'll obviously have different perspectives on all sorts of issues.
But I mean, you have a perspective depending on where you are positioned in society. As we said, you know, you've got this intersectional thing where a story about women succeeding might seem incredibly positive, but then for somebody who's a misogynist, it's not. And you know what I mean? I'm not saying that you have misogynists, but it's interesting uniting people around this idea of positivity, and what that actually means. I mean, I think there's definitely that sense that for me, positive is things that are going forward, things that promote principles of equality, that, you know, are balanced and fair, you know, that kind of thing. They're quite abstract concepts actually, but with very real world results.
I very much agree with that, but I think the difficulty comes from when you kind of get down into the nitty-gritty of what is equality and what is fair. And I think as a fairly small organisation, we're sort of still figuring that out. And we're actually in the process at the moment of doing a bit of work of kind of revisiting our editorial purpose and values with our co-owners and just kind of revisiting what positive means for all of our co-owners so that we can have a slightly clearer idea of exactly where our kind of editorial line is on some of those issues.
Mm. But even by doing that, you know, in itself, that agility, that response, it seems much healthier than, you know, trying to impose your news agenda will on everybody, which again, you know, I mean, I have a mainstream print background and I've loved working it, but it has a very, you know, very specific way of doing things. I mean, obviously the internet has sort of come along and made everything much more fluid, but, you know, ultimately the ability to question what you're doing at any point and to keep moving forward and keep working on your best practice. And you know, it's got to be a good thing. That's got to be a positive, surely, for everyone.
Yeah, well, I certainly hope so, and I think so. yeah, I mean, we're always kind of listening to feedback from people and taking it on board and seeing how we can develop and grow as an organisation and get better. And, you know, like any organization, we won't get it right every single time, but we certainly do our best to listen to everything people say and respond to any criticism fairly and provide a different perspective. Exactly. Yeah.
Just generally, I mean, I know we sort of really grappling around the idea of positive, but generally, do you think the world would be a better place if people read positive things every day? How do you think it would change if this became the paradigm rather than, you know, the one that we have now?
I mean, I do think so. I think it's really important to have balance. So I think, you know, having said everything that I've said, it is really important to acknowledge when bad things happen and to honour and respect those bad things that have happened, but then to kind of look at the sort of positive step forward. I think in my view, where more sort of mainstream organisations maybe could do better in that regard is to consciously have a balance of the stories that they're putting out between the bad things and the more constructive solution-based things, so that people reading them are getting a sense that there is good and bad in the world rather than only bad. So yeah, I think the world would be a better place. This might be slightly my kind of rose-tinted utopia, but I do think that we would have a better society, I think, if there was more kind of positive reporting in mainstream media. So for instance, like, I think a lot of the division in our society is stoked by kind of very negative headlines around marginalized groups. I think that, you know, the most obvious example that would spring to mind is the way that immigrants in this country and refugees have been kind of painted in a lot of mainstream press, and the language that's been used around people in those sorts of groups within the kind of mainstream media. That's quite a solid, tangible example of how reporting in a very negative way around a group has led to very negative feeling towards a specific group of people. Whereas if you'd taken a more kind of constructive and solutions and fair-based approach towards immigration in this country, then I would like to think that we wouldn't necessarily have the issue that we have now, where large swathes of the country view people who have moved here from other countries as overall a bad thing, as a drain on our resources and our society, as opposed to enrichers and net contributors to our society, which is what they in fact are.
But that sort of really binary thinking that seems to feed the public debate, you know, it's either one thing or another. And it's definitely a societal mentality that needs a little bit more fluidity in it than we're seeing at the moment. And perhaps positive or more balanced news could give us that.
Yeah, exactly.
As a publication, what is Positive News's aim in the end? Where do you want to get to? Do you want to change the paradigm? Do you want to be the flagship for best practice in this area? What do you think the ultimate end game is, if there is an end game?
One of our articulated aims in the sort of positive news purpose is to sort of pioneer solutions journalism, because there's been a lot more kind of examples of it that have popped up quite recently in the last like couple of years, even since I've been working for Positive News, which has been a year. Yeah, for a long time, Positive News was kind of the only real voice in solutions journalism in this country. There's a sort of a stronger kind of grounding and history of it in the States, I think.
So you're leading the way, really. I mean, that's, you know, you've set a seed.
I hope so. And I think there's a sort of question of, do we want more mainstream, better resourced news organisations to be doing what we're doing? Or is that very much against our commercial interest as a as a business?
See, one person's positive is another person's.
Yeah, exactly. We don't want them to be doing it at all. We only want people to come and subscribe to our magazine.
But it would be really nice if they did take a bit of your lead, I feel. Certainly, I think it would make for better journalism as well, and it would make for a healthier media and response by society, I think.
Yeah, and organisations are doing it. Like, The Guardian's got its Upside channel, which has got a dedicated weekly newsletter that comes out on a Friday, which is a great resource from them. It would be ideal if, yeah, those stories were littered throughout the homepage. And, you know, there was one for every sort of negative story, as opposed to in their own kind of separate section.
Well, We can but hope. I mean, you're leading the way, and it sounds like there is a slow burning paradigm shift, maybe.
I do think it's actually accelerating, though. I think that's one thing I would say. I think like positive news has been around since 1993 in sort of one format or another. In the last 4 years, since we kind of became a community-owned cooperative and increased the circulation and changed the format of the magazine, readership numbers and subscriber numbers have been going up and up and up. And like I mentioned before, even just in the last year since I've been working for them, there's definitely seen more publications launching, whether it's something as simple as a newsletter or kind of websites and things like that, launching with a much more solutions focused or constructive journalism agenda. So I think as a movement, it is accelerating. And I think people are a lot more aware than they were even, you know, 2 years ago of the impact of the news that they consume on their mental health and trying to find alternatives for that.
So changes are coming.
I think so. But again, that could just be my rose-tinted utopia view.
No, I think hope is the smart thing. I think that's for sure.
Hope is the smart thing.
Hope is the smart thing. Lucy, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, no problem, Anna. Thank you very much for having me.